You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello everyone and warm welcome along to the William Hill Golf Podcast. Nice to have your company. We are back, Dave Kellner and Dave Tindall in situ, ready for a top quality week of golfing action with the Northern Trust, the first event in the FedEx Cup playoffs almost upon us. And here at William Hill, we are top price guaranteed on the top 10, plus we are paying 8 places each way. And we'll also touch on the D&D Real Czech Masters on the European Tour as well. First of all, it's a warm welcome, a good morning to my golf podcast partner, Dave Tindall. Good morning to you, Dave.
Hello, Dave. First up, can you hear me?
I can hear you. We've been having the usual array of technical difficulties. We wouldn't be the top of the list, would we, if you wanted something solving technically?
No. I've bought a new microphone, so I'm quite excited by that, except I can't get it to work. What a waste of money.
So we're doing this the old-fashioned way with you. Are you just talking into the laptop at your end, Dave?
Just talking up the laptop, hoping it doesn't distort too much.
It's picking you up loud and clear, which is good news. I know we're excited for this week out in the world of golf, but you were tweeting, this won't mean anything to our American listeners, but you were tweeting about the snooker last night, and just a quick line on that. That was the most cringeworthy opening non-handshake you'll ever see at a sporting event, and the crowd were really fired up, weren't they, as well? It was weird seeing that in a snooker setting.
Yeah, just to give the context to anyone who doesn't know the story. So this was a game between two ex-partners, Rian Evans and Mark Allen, who have a child together, but it was a very acrimonious split. And lo and behold, she gets given a two-year tour card to play alongside the men. And first up, pretty sure she gets drawn against her ex. So there's a lot of column inches written about it before the match. And then you're thinking, will he even turn up? Well, they both turned up. And then he went to sort of fist bump and she just absolutely blanked him.
Yeah, it was fantastic.
And then the crowd went off, didn't it? I mean,
yeah.
I videoed that off the telly and just put it up on Twitter with the single word oof. And as we stand, it's got over 2,000 likes.
Wow.
I mean, all this hard-working golf research articles that I painfully put together get about 8 likes, and this gets 2,000. I don't know. Twitter, eh?
That's it. Let's talk about the golf this week then. We have a stacked field for the first event in the FedEx Cup playoffs, the Northern Trust. Only Louis Oosthuizen is missing from the top 125 in the race to Eastlake. And the winner gets 2,000 FedEx Cup points this week compared to 500 in a regular tour event. There's a huge purse, as you would expect as well. And this will be whittled away to the top 70. And at the end of the week, they will advance to the second round in the FedEx Cup playoffs before we go to Eastlake. And it's a fascinating event with John Rahm at the top of the betting at 10-1. Jordan Spieth is 16-1. Dustin Johnson 18-1. Colin Morikawa is 18-1. Xander Schauffele is 20-1. Rory McIlroy 22s. Justin Thomas is 25-1 alongside Brooks Koepka. Bryson DeChambeau and Daniel Berger and Abraham Ancer all 28-1, and it's 30-1 and bigger. The remainder, Liberty National is the host course this year. And as punters, as bettors, we have quite a bit of course form to take a look at as well. The venue hosted this tournament in 2019 and hosted the Barclays, which is this tournament, back in 2009 and 2013. That was just under a different title back then, different sponsorship. And it also hosted the 2017 President's Cup, in which the US hammered the internationals. And Dustin Johnson, who's won this particular tournament 3 times, was leading point scorer on that occasion, taking 4.5 points from his 5 matches. The course is a par 71, measures just over 7,400 yards, and we have bent grass greens this week as well. And they're quite tricky, the greens here at this venue at Liberty National. Maybe that's why scrambling was quite an important factor when Patrick Reed won a couple of years ago, back in 2019. It's an event I'm looking forward to, and it's not quite got that major buzz, but it's a top quality. All the elite players are in the lineup here this week, Dave.
Yeah, good to see. Obviously, the Olympics got a bit downgraded because of the COVID pullouts, but everyone seems to have avoided it so far this week. So yeah, it's I'm looking forward to this one. It feels like we're due another big event. Slight feeling, isn't there, that sometimes golf's on wind down after. Mm-hmm. After the majors, but you know, they still keep coming thick and fast, and this is a really good one.
I've got a feeling the Olympics is going to be huge in 3 years' time, Dave, and I think all the top names will be there. Just get that feeling in the aftermath of the Olympics. The players that were there were really, even though some of them were sceptical beforehand, the likes of Rory McIlroy, they came out in the aftermath and talked about what a positive experience it was. And I think those that missed and skipped this year will be looking at Paris in a few years' time and thinking, I want to be there.
Yeah, I think so. Do we know where it would be played? Would it be Le Golf National?
I've not seen that announcement, but I presumed it would be Le Golf National.
That would be a good venue, obviously. Lots of Europeans with happy memories, but a few kind of demons to get rid of for the Americans. Although Justin Thomas might want to get on that team and play. He did well there, didn't he, in the Ryder Cup. But yeah, I agree. I think it will only grow, and it's kind of just the word spreading, isn't it? I think there's a bit of a joke that Justin Rose used to just say, oh, I've won gold, and he used to go around singing Spandau Ballet's Gold, didn't he, to people, and it was a bit of almost a cult little joke. But I think with more players like Rory, as you said, going there this time and going, do you know what, this was pretty special, and Casey and Fleetwood were raving about it. Yeah, it's just one of those things, because there's no real history with it. It just has to create history. And I think after two editions of it, it's just starting to get more and more in the limelight, I think.
Mm. What about this event then, Dave, the Northern Trust? What are the angles in here?
Yeah, I don't think it's too difficult this week in terms of what you want to be looking for. Even though the courses, the tournament's moved around, you just tend to get a really classy winner. I looked at their world rankings of the last eight winners. That's starting with Adam Scott, who was world number four when he won here at Liberty National in 2013. Seven of the last eight were in the world's top 25. So you don't need to look too far down to find your winner. And on this particular course, do you remember a few years ago, I can't remember, it might have been Golf Digest, they did a survey of favourite courses and this came last.
Yeah, I didn't notice that. But then they made changes, didn't they? And then I think following the changes, the likes of Phil Mickelson have spoken about how it brought out the real feature and the real character of the course. So maybe if they did the vote again, it might rank differently, but who knows?
Yeah, you'd think so. They did certainly seem to die down a bit in 2019. But the main thing you can glean from 2019 was the fact that the top five in the tee to green rankings, or the top five finishers, their tee to green ranking was fourth, first, 10th, second, 7th.
Yeah.
Whereas so, their putting average, or putting strokes gained, 20th, 57th, 19th, 43rd, 33rd.
Mm.
So you said the greens are difficult. I think they're just difficult for everybody, aren't they? So no one's holding a load of putts. So I think the top two in 2019 were actually negative for strokes gained putting. So I think it is a course where you're looking for a classy tee to green type, and I don't think you need to add too much complication to that.
Very good. I've got two selections for the event. How about you, Dev?
Yeah, I've got two. Maybe could have more, but I'm just going to go with two and streamline it.
Do you want to lead off or shall I?
You.
Okay. Classy tee to green player then. Rory McIlroy is my first selection. I think I'm with the majority of the betting community in expecting Rory McIlroy to go very well this week. And I thought he was a play on the back of his immaculate ball striking in the WGC FedEx St Jude a couple of weeks ago. He's abandoned that idea of hitting a fade off the tee now, which is good. He's gone back to that tight draw, and we saw the majesty of that at Southwind, really. He gained 6 strokes on the field off the tee and 6.5 on approach, so his ball striking was certainly on point, and a better week on and around the greens would have seen him probably win the event at TPC Southwind. And as it was, he had to settle for a 12th place finish, but he's got form around Liberty National with a 6th place finish at the course back in 2019. And we know historically that McIlroy has excelled in the playoffs as well. Maybe that's got to do with there being slightly less pressure in the playoffs than there is in the major championships, and he's dealt with that better. But he has, without question, produced his best in these events. He's won plenty on bent grass greens as well in his career, and he can spike with the putter. It is an issue, obviously, the putter. It runs hot and cold, and that club will, I think, be the difference between him winning or not this week. But with the top price guarantee and the 8 places on offer, very much in camp McIlroy this week at 22-1, Dave.
Yeah, I can certainly see all that argument when you break it down, but I don't know, with Rory, there's always, well, he's done this, and this. If only he can then add this, therefore. But how often does he add the if only? Because if you're just forgetting who he is and looking at his result, Rory McIlroy has won once since 2019. Now, of all the top players, that must be the worst by a distance, isn't it?
Possibly. It was only half a dozen starts ago, though.
It was, yeah, at the Wells Fargo, but obviously a course where he was winning for the third time, so it was a particular favourite. I'm not sure if this course is in that category. I don't know. I can see everything you're saying, but I think it's easy to get sucked in by Rory and just think, oh, wow. And this line that, oh, his best is better than anyone else's, is it?
I don't quite agree with that, but I think we're getting towards, in terms of the McIlroy numbers, strokes gained, we're getting towards the old McIlroy, and we're getting them at this new price. I mean, if McIlroy was really at the peak of his powers, and as you've mentioned, it's not happened for quite some time with McIlroy in terms of dominating, but you wouldn't get anything like 22-1 about McIlroy on the numbers he's showing. I know the results haven't quite been there. He did finish 7th at the US Open and went closer to picking up a medal at the Olympics before that 12th place finish at the WGC St Jude. I just think the numbers stand out to me, and I just reckon if he can keep producing these figures tee to green and has a hot week with the putter, he will contend this week. It's my theory anyway.
Yeah, I wouldn't put anyone off an each way bet on him, because every chance of finishing in the top 8 and at 22-1, you know, that's fair enough, but for me he's just not winning enough.
Okay.
I'd almost have to get him on the perfect course. My first pick will be someone who's only 4 points shorter, but he's won 5 times in that span that I mentioned Rory about. 4 times last year, including a major, including this very event when he won with 30 under, scored an 11-shot win, Dustin Johnson.
Yeah.
So for kind of your, well, he's coming back to his best, I'm sort of going down that same route with DJ, and I've got my head turned by the price. Obviously, he's had a bit of a lull, but we've seen that before, and it doesn't take much for him to click back into gear, and he's certainly dropping the hints that it's coming back again. And as you said, what is it, 3-time win of this event?
Yeah, 3 times he's won the Northern Trust.
Yeah, it's always held, isn't it, around the sort of New Jersey, New York area, so he's got a particular liking for this part of America. And as I said, in terms of coming back to form, he was 8th at Royal St. George's, just had a bad Saturday, but shot 3 other good rounds, 68, 65, 67. Then at St. Jude, he was 10th, and again, he sort of came to win his race, maybe 2 middle rounds of 65, 9th tee to green, which was good, which is an improvement, his best tee to green numbers since the Palmetto, which was back in sort of mid-June. So he's trending in the right direction, as we say. And on this course, in this event, he was 15th on debut with a 64. Didn't make the cut in 2013, but, you know, they're stretching back a bit. 2019, he was going really well, wasn't he? 63, 67. but then had a flaky weekend. But obviously since then, his last two visits, that one and the one before, you mentioned it, 4.5 points in the President's Cup. You'd say this is a course DJ really likes. Yeah. I don't know what he's coming to this event in great form. He's coming to this event in not great form, and he's ended up winning it. So I just think he can... I don't know, he doesn't... Maybe with Rory, sometimes he's sort of overthinking it, or there's too much expectation. With DJ, he doesn't seem to notice it, does he? So because... You know, he hasn't been in great form. He won't sort of take any notes of that. You know, he's just a proven winner. And I thought 18-1. I think my pull the trigger number on him was 16, so to get 18s is even better.
Yeah, 18-1. I do think Dustin Johnson will go well this week. I also think Jordan Spieth will go well at 16-1, who's a couple of points shorter in the market than Dustin Johnson. But McIlroy is my first pick. My second pick, I'm going with Adam Scott at 40-1. Who you mentioned earlier?
Giving him for last week's 4-foot misput.
Then. I don't think it'll bother him whatsoever. In all honesty, I mean, he putted slightly better than he usually does last week at the Wyndham, and he always, when he pops on the radar on the back of a good week, and let's face it, he should have won last week if he'd made that 5-footer. I don't think he will dwell on it, and I don't think we should dwell on it as prospective punters either. He routinely strings his best performances together. We've seen that throughout his entire career with Adam Scott. He showed that in mid-2019. He went 8th, 2nd and 7th in three consecutive events at the PGA Memorial and the US Open, big tournaments, and did something similar in the playoffs that year as well, with finishes of 5th, 9th and 6th in the Northern Trust, which was on this course back in 2019, and the BMW and the Tour Championship. He won the Barclays at Liberty National in 2013, and he's clearly found comfort at this course, and that's been highlighted by his scrambling numbers at Liberty National, which are superb, and that's obviously the Achilles heel of his game, Scott, sometimes. Some might balk at this price, but I think it's really fair at 40-1, and he's a definite bet for me, Adam Scott, this week on the back of that second place finish last week.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned him holding his form. Do you remember, was it 5 years ago? I think he won back-to-back events in Florida.
Yeah, and I think he finished second Did he go second, first? I think it was that.
Yeah, so, yeah, he's definitely someone who, when he's in the groove, he's in the groove. So, as I said a bit earlier, that putting isn't everything this week. I do like that bet at 40-1. It's almost like last week hasn't happened, or it's almost like you're either ignoring what he did last week or you're ignoring his course.
Do you think people do get put off by that? Like you mentioned, the miss. Would you be put off by the miss 5-footer last week on the first playoff hole?
If he was a 20-year-old with no win, yes. Yeah. 40-odd with a load of wins, I'm not.
Yeah, fair enough. Okay, that's my second pick. Your second selection?
Yeah, Daniel Berger for me.
Yeah.
28-1. I just think he's on the verge of a kind of taking a next leap and winning an event a notch above what he's done before. So he won at Pebble earlier this year in grand style, finished off with an eagle. And he's been in fantastic form, hasn't he, Daniel Berger? Just playing well in majors, which again is a step up on his past record in those events. He was 7th at the US Open, 8th in the Open Championship. Then he was 5th in the St. Jude in another classy field where he was 1st for approach, gained 9.9 strokes on approach. That was some effort in that field. 3rd in strokes gained tee to green in that event as well, where, he's, as I said, he finished 5th. He's just shooting some great numbers, and it's no surprise. It's not a purple patch. I just think he's sort of incrementally getting better and better as the months go by and the years go by. So I expect him. He's now ready to win something like this. He's not played the course in this event, but he did play in that President's Cup that we mentioned. He actually got the winning half point. There's a quote where Steve Stricker sort of came and sought him out, and he was pretty thrilled that he'd done that. So some happy memories. He won 2 of his 3 matches that week. 28-1, you maybe got to train yourself a little bit that he's a bit shorter. You know, maybe in the past Daniel Berger's 40-1 for this or 35, something like that. But you can't argue with 28-1 in terms of what he's doing against the very best fields. I mean, three of the last four tournaments, he's finished in that top eight, and two of those were majors and another a WGC. I mean, it's a deep field this week, but it's, you know, there's less people that can take him down. So he's my pick. I'm just expecting it. Maybe if not this week, next week. But I think this is I certainly don't want to miss him. And again, maybe like your Adam Scott, I'm just sort of riding the hot horse kind of thing.
I like those four picks that we've come up with there. Obviously, four different selections, but we've got a couple of big guns in Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy and Daniel Berger, who's just a little bit in behind that pair, and then Adam Scott, who played well last week. So four selections. Let's talk about the players that we've not gone for at the top of the betting. John Rahm, who presumably won't catch COVID this week. Hopefully not, anyway. I mean, his form is just incredible, isn't it? Obviously. Winner of the US Open, third, and should have probably won the Open if he was, if he'd have putted a little bit better. And he comes into this as the 10-1 favourite, rightly at the top of the betting. Finished third here a couple of years ago. You can't really put people off if they fancy John Rahm this week, can you, Dave?
No, not at all. It's almost like his price is about right, but there's a few there who maybe been pushed out a little bit.
Yeah,
I think they should get closer. Something's got to give, I guess, somewhere, but. Yeah, Rahm is a 10-1 shot in this field, given its history producing classy winners. Yeah, if someone came to you and said, Rahm, no other bets for me, you'd go, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah, yeah. Jordan Spieth, 16-1, was that tempting?
Yeah, it's about his price, I think. Whereas I think you can argue a bit for DJ, well, you can argue a lot for DJ at 18s. Spieth. Not totally convinced why he's a shorter price than DJ. Well, I'm not at all, otherwise I'd go for him. I guess maybe the course form, as well as his obvious recent form, he's got a 6th and a 19th. Would the fact that the greens are a bit of a leveller go against him slightly?
Yeah, possibly so. He did play well here in the President's Cup, didn't he, alongside Justin Thomas. Picked up 3.5 points, I think. Obviously, you can't put too much stock in that President's Cup performance because the Americans just bowled over the internationals on that occasion. Colin Morikawa's 18-1, which would be of interest as well, I suppose. But I think he's always of interest, isn't he?
Yeah. Just back to Spieth. I mean, at St Jude, although he seems to have played well again, he actually lost strokes off the tee and on approach.
Yeah,
it's not quite vintage stuff there. Yeah, Morikawa. I mean, if you're talking about if you just lay down these kind of what you're looking for, a ball striker who's not the best putter, then it's almost the first name you come up with, isn't it? Colin Morikawa.
Yeah, and if he does have a week when he puts well, he contends, doesn't he? It's automatic. Like at the Open Championship, when he gained 5 strokes at Memorial, finished second, picked up 4 strokes at WGC Mexico, he was a winner on that occasion. Every event since then, he's lost strokes putting, apart from those three that I've mentioned. He won 2 of them and finished second in the other one. So if he has a good putting week, he's almost guaranteed to contend, Morikawa. Amazingly, he was dead level in strokes gained approach at the WGC St Jude. And you look through his approach numbers, and that is he'd be like a 1-20 shot to pick up strokes any given week on the field on approach, Dave. And he didn't manage that at St Jude, which is a major shock, I suppose.
No, he was coming back from Tokyo, which you give him a slight pass, and he was actually one of the ones that said, I do struggle going back east to west. So maybe it got to him a little bit more than others. One man who didn't struggle coming back from Tokyo was Abraham Hanser, who actually won the event. So put that in your notebooks. He doesn't suffer from jet lag. So he won the St Jude in superb style, shot a second round 62. And he was runner-up here in 2019. He kind of, in a sense, maybe I'm going a bit off geography here, but he reminds me of maybe a Vijaygas who suddenly started winning after knocking on the door a bit.
Yeah.
He's someone who could go well, certainly occupy a top eight place.
Yeah, he was the one, though, that I thought that if you had like the choice between him, Hovland, Scheffler, Berger, Cantlay, those around him, he was the one that I thought was a little bit short in the betting. I understand the fact that he's won on his last start and that he's got form at the course as well, but I'd much rather have Daniel Berger at 28-1 than Abraham Ancer at 28-1. I just think Berger's at a different level to Ancer, personally.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately I'm the same, but back to the idea of stringing good performances together. Earlier in May, he went fifth at the Valspar, second at the Wells Fargo, eighth at the PGA. So, again, it's an each-way price. If you're putting a team together, you could certainly have him on board as well.
Any others you want to mention then, just away from the top of the betting at bigger prices? Any players catch your eye? I know we expect a classy elite winner this week, but we've got eight places, someone to sneak into the frame at a bigger price perhaps?
Yeah, the one who's playing really well, his odd steps into reflect, Johnny Vegas.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
He's hitting it great. He's hitting it long. He's hitting it straight. His strokes gain off the tee, a great tee to green run. Numbers are very strong every week. I mean, he's lost four results, 15th, 16th, 2nd, 11th, and then two starts before that, another second. So if you want a big price outside, was he 125?
He is,
one?
Yeah. I think that's a great, yeah. I think that's a fantastic price.
He could run into a place, and he did all right on the in this event. He played it in 2019 at Liberty National, second round 69. Final round 67, and he played the President's Cup here, so he's got a bit of form on the course. So yeah, he would be my obvious outsider, to be honest.
Yeah, I like that one a lot. Johnny Vegas at 125-1. Shall we move on, Dev?
Yes, let's do that.
We have the we'll probably be quite brief on this event. It is the secondary event this week, obviously, the D&D Real Czech Masters. And Sam Horsfield tops the betting at 10-1. Rory Sabatini is 14s. Danny Willett, 14-1. Ryan Fox is 20s. Callum Shinquin is 20-1. Dean Burmester is 20-1. George Kutsaya and Johannes Veerman are both 22s. Vincent Norman, Adrian Aus, both 25s. And it's 28-1 and bigger the rest. Obviously, the sporting event this week, going up against the Northern Trust, it was never going to be a particularly strong field, but at least the boy from Bratislava, Rory Sabatini, has decided to come over and continue to grow the game in Eastern Europe. And because of the field strength, only Sam Horsfield is ahead of him in the market. The Albatross course has hosted this event since its inception back in 2014, but last year's event was cancelled due to the COVID pandemic, so there's enough course form for punters to have a look through. It's not an event that I've had the opportunity to look at, Dave, but anything catch your eye this week? Tell us a little bit about the course as well.
It's funny. I don't know, because of the time of year, this is always held in kind of mid-late August, isn't it? Because it's in the summer holidays and I've got kids, I don't think I've ever seen a shot hit this event. Honestly, I was thinking I can't summon up any memories of it at all.
No, I'm the same, to be honest.
It used to be sort of thrown in with like the Russian Open, didn't it? And it's a sort of a bit of a down few weeks on the PGA Tour. But obviously, you paid me to come on this podcast, I hope. Have you? But maybe not. So I've done some research. And yeah, the obvious thing that comes out is that big hitters seem to dominate. I think if you look at the winners, and you see Thomas Peters winning it twice, you think that's the case. There's a slight curveball in that Paul Peterson, the American, won it once.
Yeah.
But I think that is the exception to the rule, and I think, you know, you're being a bit obtuse if you decide that, you know, you're going to go with the exception rather than the rule. So the rule is a big hitter. So Sam Horsfield is probably in that Thomas Peters mould, in that we see glimpses of his talent and then expect him to win every week, because when he's on, he's on. So he's an obvious one. I think it's a bit short, maybe, his price. Well, it is. The one I have got a bet, to be fair. I'm going to go with Jack Kruijswijk.
Yeah, 28.
He's a big hitter, top 25 in driving distance. You actually go to the European Tour stats page, and he's there. He is first for strokes gained total and first and stroke average. So he's, you know, there's more to him than just blasting the ball off the tee. And South Africans have done well, young South Africans, although he's not actually that young, is he? I think he's about 28, 29. But he's certainly playing some of his best golf. He's maybe matured a bit later. And just his form, he's there all the time. 11th and 10th the last 2 weeks in Northern Ireland and Wales. Then he played well in Germany as well. Earlier in the year, back to this idea of people stringing results together, he went 6-5-5-7. First of those within South Africa Players' Championship, but then a couple of top fives in Kenya, then seventh in the Austrian Open. So he's certainly one who can keep it going when he's on a run. And then the bonuses, he's actually played this twice before and played it well. He was seventh on debut in 2018, and then 23rd. 2019, seventh at halfway. So he's got, in a weak field, he seems to have quite a lot going for him. The course should suit, and actually it does suit. He's in good form, and South Africans are having a bit of a roll, aren't they, this year? So, I expect a big performance from him. He's been playing quite a lot. He's a fitness fanatic, apparently. That's probably why I can hit it further than most, but I think we've discussed him on this podcast a couple of times. I think you might have put him at once. But that was probably during a spell when he was in good form. He's certainly in good form again. So even though, yeah, I don't want to put too much of my weekly stake on him, I think he's worth a little each way go at 28.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say when I was a fitness fanatic, that was something that you could relate to, Dave, then for a second.
Right. Did you run a marathon, or did I imagine that?
You've imagined that. I've run a few half marathons, but never done the marathon yet. Yeah, it's not bad. It's not bad. Yeah. Hopefully one day.
Yeah, okay. I asked Graham Sharp, former William Hill. Is he still at William Hill?
Former William Hill, yeah.
Former William Hill kind of...
he was a PR guru, I think you'd say.
PR guru, yes. Yeah. He used to offer prices on anything, didn't he? When you hear that someone, maybe say like Chris Kirkland being England goalkeeper.
Yeah.
Graham's probably offered a big price to Chris Kirkland's dad. I got in contact with Graham when my son was born and asked for a price on him to win the London Marathon. I think he gave me massive odds, but he gave me 11-4 just for him to complete.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I mean, he's only 15, so and he's showing absolutely no interest in running, but I can work on him.
Did you have that bet at 11-4 then?
Yeah, so I've got that. So
that's a fair price, I think, to be honest.
My dad was a pretty good runner. He used to, when he was at uni, he used to run with a couple of people who ran in the Olympics, sort of training partners. Well, I'm not bad, but I just find it incredibly dull.
Would you take a price on what price would you take on yourself to complete the London Marathon?
Yeah, I reckon I could do it. I reckon it's in the genes for me to complete. I wouldn't do it very fast. It's just if I could be bothered. I prefer a sort of ball at my feet or a racket or something in my hand or a cue. Do you struggle with that, boredom when running?
Yeah, a little bit. I tend to I go running with one of my colleagues, Ross Briley, who you know quite a lot, and I do find it a lot more enjoyable when I'm running with someone else. But I tend to listen to podcasts when running as well, so the time can go quickly. Not this podcast, but other podcasts.
I need that. And I joined Solitaire Striders running group. And just sort of you end up chatting to someone and forgetting that you're running.
Exactly, yeah. I joined Chapel Allerton Runners Group at the beginning of the year, and it's so much more fun when you're running in a big group and the time goes so much more quickly.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So some advice there on running.
I'll put it under 5.5 hours for your completion of the London Marathon, Dave. Would you take that? Under 5.5?
Yeah, I reckon.
Yeah, I reckon
some sort of incentive to do it.
Yeah, well, maybe some sort of financial monetary betting incentive would be
I was thinking more of a worthy charity to that I can. I haven't got a particular affiliation to one particular charity at the minute.
Okay.
So if something comes up, then you may see me It's a long way, isn't it? I've heard some people who are flying around and then they hit the wall and then they had a terrible time, like six and a half hours.
Yeah, I think it's all about pacing yourself, isn't it, in the London Marathon. Not going off too quickly, but you'll be keyed up, won't you? Like adrenaline flowing.
Yeah, I know.
I'd like to do it in under 4 hours. That would be the target. Yeah, the half marathons I've done recently are 1 hour 50 ish.
Yeah.
So it'd be nice to think I could do it in under 4 hours, but I think I'd need a bit more training to do that, I think.
Yeah, all that's training, isn't it? You've got to put in. You can't just turn up on the day.
Yeah. Shall we wrap up here?
Yes.
They could have. They probably tuned out about 5 or 6 minutes ago, but that's fine. Selections for the Northern Trust, first of all, Dave?
So I'll go with Seb Coe in the 1800s. I'll go with, Dustin Johnson, he's 18 to 1. I'll go a point and a half each way at 18s, and I'll also go a point and a half each way on Daniel Berger at 28s.
Okay, I'm going to go a point and a half each way Rory McIlroy at 22s and a point each way Adam Scott at 40s. And just the one bet between us in the Czech Masters, and it is?
Yeah, I'll go for Jack Kruijswijk at 28 to 1, just half a point each way on him.
Very good. Very good. I think that just about brings us to the end of the podcast, Dave.
Yeah, this new snooker golf running podcast that we're trialing.
It's an all sport podcast. Oh, I didn't mention the Women's Opens on this week as well, which is remiss of me not to mention that. Nelly Korda heads the betting here with William Hill at 8 to 1. My advice would be to check out Matt Cooper's content, Dave.
Is it this week or is it next week?
It's this week. Starts on Thursday.
Okay.
Yeah, and Matt Cooper, I think, has done a piece for Sporting Life with his selections for the AIG Women's Open. So do make sure you check that out at sportinglife.com. Have a look at Matt Cooper's thoughts, his selections for the event. So it is this week, yeah.
The main winners for the women, you get some crazy old prices, don't you? Coming in.
You can do. Nelly Korda has...
Something else at the minute.
Yeah, she's just playing amazing golf, isn't she? And I mean, her. It was weird. She was in complete command after two rounds of the Olympics. Then the field started to come back to her a little bit, and then she kind of just sealed it on the final day. But with that gold medal added to her list of accomplishments this season. I mean, she might take some stopping this week, Nelly Korda, 8-1, but Matt Cooper's...
I'm no expert on women's golf, but if there's a trend, it seems to be you get players who sort of dominate for a spell.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it, that?
And then they maybe go away, but she's won three of the last five starts, Nelly Korda.
Yeah.
I also think... let's keep this on the sporting thing. Did you watch any of Wimbledon with her brother, Sam Korda?
I didn't see any of that. Oh, I did. Well, I heard...
British guy, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
But he just looks... He looks the part. He looks someone who can step up.
That's an unbelievable sporting family, though, isn't it?
I know. Peter Korda, the dad. But Sam Korda, he's just got... He's got all the shots. He's tall. He's got a big serve. I just thought, right, note him down as a future... I don't know, maybe slam winner, I don't know, but someone to maybe get a few decent prices on before he really hits the big time. But you think they're a competitive family, so old Nelly there winning all the golf, you think that's only going to inspire him as well?
Definitely, definitely. Don't forget, you can follow myself and Dave on Twitter as well, at D Kellner, at Dave Tindall Golf, the two Twitter handles. Thank you for your company on this Tuesday. Dave, it's been my pleasure.
Thank you, Dave.
Thank you, everyone that's tuned in and listened. Do check out all the betting for the golf this week at williamhill.com and on the app. Three events. We've just mentioned the Women's Open there. Do check out Matt Cooper's piece on that at sportinglife.com. We've got the Czech Masters on the European Tour. And the big event this week is the Northern Trust, the first event in the FedEx Cup playoffs. And don't forget, here at William Hill, we are top price guaranteed on the top 10. Plus, we are paying 8 places each way. All the golf betting available at williamhill.com and on the app. Enjoy it this week, folks. It should be a good one. And thank you for listening to this week's William Hill Golf Podcast.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.